As I always do on my last session, I want to start with some thank yous. And the first group I want to thank is everybody in this room and outside that went the extra mile and resurrected some sports gear to wear today to join in the school spirit, your pro team, your college team, your high school team. The Pop Warner team, wherever you are, if you've got some sports gear on today, stand up and show us proudly what you're wearing today. Yeah, look at all that stuff, man. We got a lot of good sports gear on here today. I think that is excellent. Thank you for doing that. That is really a above and beyond the call of duty. I think that's really great. As Jesse said in the beginning of the week, if he's doing the math right, this is our this is my 31st summer with you guys, which is pretty amazing that they would have brought me in at 12 years old. But it's really, honestly, in our family terms, it's our favorite place. We love it here, and in this last year, I've gotten to know a lot more about Herman than I've ever known before, and it's so exciting what's going on here, and the history that's here. To stand on this spot is just amazing and humbling to a guy like me, and then to think about all that's ahead and the exciting day. Mount Herman is a great spot, and I normally start thanking people by name, but again, I've met so many people over the last year that we never see who make this thing work at every level. The people that have, you know, served our meals and cooked our meals and cleaned our sheets and, you know, made our beds and plant the flowers and, you know, all the stuff that happens here. They're doing stuff with our kids right now, and oh my gosh, it's amazing. So can you just give it up as loudly as you can to all the Mount Herman people? Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very well deserved. They are an extraordinary group. I am so delighted that I've been able to be with you this week for going on 27 years now. I've been able to make a living. God has provided speaking and writing full time. And so nothing's really changed. I'm still always available to come and speak at your church. I'm available to come and speak at your business event. Because of the topics I kind of do on the corporate side, I get to do a wide variety of stuff. You know, I tout all the name recognizable. You know, I've been with Microsoft and Disney and Bank of America and all that kind of stuff. But I had a great event just a couple months ago. I keynoted the American Culinary Federation, 600 chefs in their full regalia. And I'm ready to go out and give my presentation, and the meeting planner goes, oh, by the way, before you go up, let me tell you, you're the first speaker in 25 years that isn't a chef. Now go out there and get them, you know, and it's like, oh, thanks for the encouragement. But it went really well. They gave me one of those chef's jackets at the end, and now if it only came with cooking expertise, I'd be really hot stuff. But and of course, as I've mentioned in the past, my all-time favorite event that I'd never put in my bio, I did keynote many years ago the National Portable Toilet Convention. So anyway, if you will just keep me in mind if you have any kind of event or something like that. Here's another little behind-the-scenes scoop. You know the Right Reverend Dear Dr. Barnes, who is, you tried to get my mic today, but I kept it. So I wrote a few notes to say thank you on my iPhone so that I would remember it. And he has, of course, figured this out. And so he is now calling me on my phone to erase my screen. I don't know who to thank anymore because I got this Craig Barnes on my cell phone. You are just bad, man. You know, you used this very innocent, childlike term last night. You're impish. You're beyond impish. You're a felon, man. You deserve hard time somewhere. Who wants to go see Craig with me next summer in Folsom Prison? All right. Hello, I'm Johnny Cash and Craig Barnes tonight at Folsom Prison. Okay. Now, if you'll give me a second to try to find my page that I was looking at from my cell phone. Oh, yeah, there we are. Okay. So this guy is too much. Oh, my goodness. But he's close to meeting the Lord. So if you'll pray for Craig, We're loving him to Christ. Anyway, if I can ever help you out in any event, be sure and let me know. And then I have said more than once, so I won't say again other than we would love to have you at the BCI event this fall. But another event that I'm going to be a part of here at Mount Hermon that I haven't said anything about is the week of August 18th through 22nd, we're having a conference that we call Creating a Legacy. And it's specifically for people like me who are empty nesters, who because there's not really any children's programs. It's for adults who are trying to answer the question, what is it that I want to leave behind? Beyond, you know, a will and grandma's jewelry and, you know, a nice stock portfolio. What are the real significant things down deep inside that we want to leave that would be our legacy to our children? We've done this now a couple, 3 years. It's really a great conference. It's different than this one. It's a little more meeting intensive, but it's really, really an exciting thing. We look at all kinds of subjects where we do tracks and just talk to people about specific topics. It's great. So if you're available that week, we'd love to have you come and be a part of that as well. So and it plays right into what we're going to talk about today as we wrap this up. There is a phrase in the business world that has rapidly reached cliche status, and I believe cliches become cliches because they're really true statements. We just say them over and over again. But there's this great statement. I love it. It has special meaning for a Christian in the business world that goes like this. Begin with the end in mind. Begin with the end in mind. And of course, your supervisor or your, you know, CEO, your vision caster at your business will say, you know, if we want to get to this level of sales or this level of, you know, the pie piece of all the customers that are out there, we've got to move through these 8 steps to get to that, you know. But beginning with the end in mind, to me, means that for our purposes this morning, I want you to think ahead, and for some of you, it'll be thinking way down the road. For others of us, it's not that far down the road. How do you want your life to look by the time you've left your days here on earth? What do you want your legacy to be? We've looked at the life of David, and like I said, I tried to do it in an even-handed way with 4 presentations. I tried to talk about 2 that will be on a positive nature, which the second one will be this morning. And then we looked at 2 of David's less proud moments, the whole incident with the ark, the falling of the ark, and then the murder and adultery and wrong place at the wrong time debacle of Bathsheba and Uriah and that whole thing. And by the way, thanks to so many of you who talked about the presentation yesterday and this whole issue of forgiveness that you're dealing with because of guilt that's come up in life. Begin with the end in mind. What does that really look like? I mean, you can take it to its literal case. And there are people who apparently have lots of extra time on their hands, and they make little websites and Google pages that you can look at that talk about the very last words that people uttered before they passed away. Some are funny in that they are inane. Others are sad. Others are fascinating. As a lover of history, I always, whenever I think of last words, famous last words, I think of the incredible, as any Christian would say, coincidence that John Adams and Thomas Jefferson both died on the same day. Not only did they both die on the same day, they both died exactly 50 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, July 4th, 1826. It's amazing. Jefferson went first, and his last words were, "Is it the 4th?" Boom, he was gone. And then Adams, who was still alive, said later that day, as his last words, "Thomas Jefferson still survives." Boom. And then he was gone. Poor guy died with incorrect information on his lips as his last words. Some are far less profound. Theodore Roosevelt's last words were, "Please put out the light." Franklin Roosevelt's last words were, "I got a terrible headache." Bill Butterworth Sr., my dad, uttered his last words, "Oh my." In an incredible senior citizen event, my dad was playing Saturday night miniature golf in Philadelphia. Set up his putt, looked at his rest of his foursome, and said, "Oh my." And according to the EMTs, he was dead before he hit the ground. That was it. No more Big Bill. Well, I'm not sure that what we really want to focus on is our very last words, because none of us know when that will be. Maybe we can pull back just a little bit to a different kind of thing, but very similar. Rather than last words, how about something that would be known in the pages of history as a farewell address? Now, maybe you don't even know that, but if you could write in advance your farewell address, the last words that you would want those close to you to know, what would it be? I thought it was interesting. USA Today, the Friday before Father's Day, they don't really do much on their weekend edition, so they really go for Monday through Friday. On the Friday before Father's Day, one of their reporters, a guy who's on staff, writes all the time, wrote a front page article called "A Priceless Gift, My Last Video of My Dad." And here's what he wrote, just a portion of it. "On my final Saturday with my dad, we walked for 2 hours in the Santa Cruz Hills. After lunch, we returned to the house where my dad indulged me by answering questions about his life on a video. Little did either of us realize that within 36 hours, he would be dead of a sudden heart attack. That this encounter would be my final chance to learn details of the life that only he could reveal. So as we approach Father's Day, I urge everyone to sit down with their dads to record and preserve these personal stories for future generations before it's too late. We live in an era unlike any other in history where most of us now have a video camera in our pocket, the smartphone. Let's use that tool to tell and preserve our stories. So sons and daughters, talk to your fathers this weekend. Record their stories and learn more about their lives. You'll be thrilled you took the time, and so will future generations." This whole idea of if we knew in advance the last words that we would have with our family, what would we say? What would be the essence of how we would summarize our lives? In the life of David, we have this kind of thing. I mean, there is literally a farewell address recorded. But for a lot of us, we won't know. It might be like my dad. Death will be so sudden, you won't realize that one of the last family affairs was going to be the last time you were all together. It's been 2 years, but I'm still basking in the afterglow of a very special birthday party my adult children gave me 2 years ago. And we decided to go on a cruise, and the cruise was wonderful, and the kids were wonderful all throughout the cruise, and all kinds of wonderful things happened. But the very last night, they reserved a room on the ship so that we could have a private party. I will spare you the comedy element, but I will say that it was a room that included a karaoke machine. And some of us are more musical than others. Let's just leave it at that. But everyone had their chance to do a solo. And I shouldn't say, but if you could have seen my 6'9" son-in-law, basketball coach, not known for his singing ability, singing, what group is his favorite group? Depeche Mode, yes. Singing great hymns of the faith on the Depeche Mode Golden album. That was a keeper. But anyway, and my kids gave me three very thoughtful gifts on that birthday party. They know I love history and I love the presidents, and my favorite president is Theodore Roosevelt. They found this piece of art that was a campaign button for Theodore Roosevelt, except it was enlarged. It was about the size of a dinner plate. And it had the pin in the back, and it was, you know, three-dimensional. It was this campaign button, and it was a very well-known photograph of Theodore Roosevelt in the middle of it, except he was now wearing an NFL football helmet. And it's absolutely fascinating. It hangs very proudly in my house.
I love that. And then they have heard me talk about growing up with the Phillies and the baseball cards and the unknown favorite player of mine, number six, Johnny Callison. And sure enough, they gave me this jersey, of which I probably have the only one in America. Johnny Callison has been dead for years, and the rest of the country has no idea who he is. But I wear this with great pride all the time. And then they gave me a journal. They know I've journaled for over 35 years. But they all wrote something in the front of the journal. And somebody, and they still are wondering if this was a good idea or not, somebody suggested that we go around the room and each one of them read aloud to me what they wrote in their journal. There were more tears that moment. It was really special. To the point, I mean, you can take me now, Lord. This is the most wonderful event I've ever experienced in my family. I can go now a happy man. If that's my farewell, that would be great. But we don't know when our farewell is going to be, do we? David knew when his kingship was going to end, as he was going to pass it on to his son Solomon. And in the book of 1 Chronicles, chapter 28, we have David's farewell address. And I would like to take just a few minutes to walk us through a couple, three key points of David's farewell address. If nothing else, to spur us on to the question, if I want to begin with the end in mind, I'm beyond the beginning, but what do I want the end to look like, and what might need to change now in order to make the end more like how I want it to be? In 1 Chronicles chapter 28, David begins by saying, David summoned all the officials of Israel to Jerusalem, the leaders of the tribes, the commanders of the army divisions, the other generals and captains and overseers in the royal property and livestock, the palace officials, the mighty men, all the other brave warriors in the kingdom. In other words, David put all his key people together. He looked at his organizational chart and said, get me everybody that's a direct report, get everybody that's a direct report to them. We want the top people here because I've got some things to say. Verse 2, David rose to his feet and said, my brothers and my people, it was my desire to build a temple where the Ark of the Lord's Covenant, God's footstool, could rest permanently. I made the necessary preparations for building it, but God said to me, you must not build a temple to honor my name, for you are a warrior and have shed much blood. So reduced to its most simple terms for the note takers in the room, if I would summarize David's opening remark, it's this. Number one, God's ways are more important than my ways. God's ways are more important than my ways. Now, what he's referring to here goes back to, you can just jot down 2 Samuel chapter 7. And the story there takes up after the story we did on Tuesday about David decided, you know what, I don't want the ark out beyond Jerusalem. Bring it in here so that we can have God close to us, literally and figuratively. Let's have that ark close. So they finally did it God's way, got the ark close. And then when you read 2 Samuel chapter 7, if I can paraphrase it, it begins with David reflecting, and he says something along the lines of, there's still something that's not right. I am in this glorious palace while the ark of God is out in a tent. I think what I should do, a wonderful gift that I can give back to God, is to build God a temple where that ark can stay. It will be a beautiful testimony to the glory of God. I mean, again, a very well-intentioned idea, which many of us know this experience. You felt God calling you to do something, and you had the best intentions, and it was exactly what you thought would be a great gift, a great use of your gifts, a great use of your money, a great use of your time. This was something you really got excited about, but for some reason, God said, no, we're going to do it a different way. Now, we get the clue in, verse 7. Your son, Solomon... Or no, it's the end of verse 6. I see. Your son Solomon will build my temple and its courtyards, for I have chosen him as my son, and I will be his father. God made a distinction between David and Solomon in very simple terms. David, you will go down in history as a warrior. Solomon will go down in history as a man of peace. I want the temple built by the king of peace, not the king of war. And so David had kind of this good news, bad news thing that you read about in 2 Samuel 7 that some of us can understand. God, I have this great idea. I'm going to build you a temple. God says, no. Oh, well, that's really disappointing. Well, wait a minute, I'm not done. The reason I'm saying no to you is your son will build it. Talk about a legacy. What parent in this room would get upset about the fact that something great and mighty that you want to do for God, God is going to withhold from you in order that your children might be able to experience it? We'd all love that. That David was absolutely ecstatic when he realized what God is doing by quote unquote withholding from me, doing what I want to do, is he's giving me a legacy in my lineage that's going to be forever and ever. This is really good news. Now, you know, we talked a lot about learning how to speak properly and, you know, writing and all this kind of stuff, David's journal entries and stuff. You know, one thing that people are taught who become news reporters. One of the things you learn in journalism, for example, is if you've got a story, you lead with the most important point. You've got your headline that's big news, and then you've got your most important point. And so I would suggest to you, this is exactly the kind of outline that David is using. He starts with what is most important. God's ways are better than my ways. You want to put a presentation together and have it be effective? Don't bury the most important thing you want to say deep into the talk when many of us feel like you're just talking in our sleep. All right? Lead with it. This is the most important thing you need to hear. In John chapter 13, the Last Supper passage, it's fascinating to me that you get to verse, I believe, well, let's turn there. Hold your place there. Turn to John chapter 13. I'll show you another example of this. John 13, in verse 31, it says, as soon as Jesus left, not Jesus, Judas, as soon as Judas left the room. So this says to me that from verse 31 on to the end of the chapter, for the first time that evening, Jesus has his real live lieutenants there for his farewell address. He's got his faithful 11. And so it's interesting what he opens with. The most important point Jesus makes in John 13, once Judas leaves, is this is how people will know you're connected with me, that you love one another. Not that you are men of integrity, not that you have deep faith, not that you have doctrinal purity. Although all those things are absolutely essential, he chose to say, the way people will know you're connected to me is watching them connect with one another. Love. That's the big news. That's the headline. Okay? So what's your headline? What's your opening words of your news story? When people talk about you, what are they going to say? Do you have some big splash moment in your life that people are going to remember you by? I mean, I would love to be able to just have a view as to what people thought of David when he passed away, as opposed to centuries of history that make it different. But the most popular image that people think of when they think of something that David left behind goes like this: the Lord is my shepherd. And they know and love the lyric that God inspired David to write. He's more than a one-hit wonder. He's got a lot of songs that he wrote. But he was known most of all for that One song. Jesse and I share books all the time, and we love to read stories, and I love to let him see what it was like to grow up in the 60s and all this kind of stuff. And then he found a book, and he gave it to me about all that, and there was a section about Bob Dylan and how Bob Dylan went through this phase where he refused to do any of the songs that made him famous. And then one night, for whatever reason, he broke into Blowing in the Wind, and you'd have thought Jesus had returned. I mean, the place went nuts. It's like, that's the song we're going to remember him for. And so I don't care about the new stuff that he's working on. Whereas other performers just cry uncle and say, you know what, this is the 9,842nd time, but let's do Fire and Rain, shall we, James Taylor fans? Okay? And everybody's cool with that, all right? What's the one thing that you're going to leave behind that people are going to say, that's your headline, that's your one hit, that's how people will remember you? Point number one, God's ways are more important than my ways. Here's the second point. We'll go back to 1 Chronicles 28, and we'll go to verse 9. Verse 9, he turns to his son and says, Solomon, my son, learn to know the God of your ancestors intimately. Worship and serve him with your whole heart and a willing mind, for the Lord sees every heart and knows every plan and thought. If you seek him, you will find him, but if you forsake him, he will reject you forever. So take this seriously. The Lord has chosen you to build a temple as his sanctuary. Be strong and do the work. Here's how I've reduced that as a second point. Point number two, I have learned the power of four words. Know, worship, serve, and seek. I've learned the power of four words. Know, worship, serve, and seek. Now take this with a grain of salt, because you've been listening to me all week, and some of you have been listening to me for a long time, so you know my style, you know where I'm coming from, you know my strengths, and you know my weaknesses. But as I grow older, I am definitely at the place right now where I'm beyond trying to impress the people I speak to with my intense, deep theological abilities and knowledge. The older I get, the more I realize that, you know what? Christianity is pretty simple. You think about Jesus and the 12 disciples. This is not postgraduate study in the Holy Land. This is some very simple guys. Now, simple's not dumb. One of my very favorite Bible teachers, I heard him the other day, he said, you know, I get criticized all the time for not being deep. And he had a great rejoinder. He says, you know, they're confusing. It's not that I'm not deep. I'm clear. And I thought, well, that's a good description. I mean, and again, there's nothing wrong with depth. I mean, that's why the ocean starts shallow and grows deep. I mean, there's plenty place for that. But the older I get, it's not how deep I can get. It's realizing that Jesus has made it very simple. And David is almost kind of grabbing onto the same thing. Look, we can talk about a lot of history. We can talk about a lot of stuff that went on in my life. When you boil it all down, there's really like some key words. I remember growing up in a church that sang all the hymns, and one of our favorite hymns was, trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy but to trust and obey. That really cuts off all the fat and leaves just the filet there for you to eat. Trust and obey. David says, know, worship, serve, and seek. To me, know talks about the inside. It's a word that speaks to intimacy. I want to keep developing the discipline of time alone with God every day. And I am the poster child for inconsistent devotions throughout my life. Really good period, and then weeks without, and then another really strong period. And I journal every day, if as long as you have a slot for the days that I don't. But the older I get, the more I realize, you know what, I want to do this every day. And I'm a morning guy. I mean, that's one of the things that liberated me, is finally realizing, you want to have time alone with God, here's my suggestion. Have time alone with God when you're at your best. If you're not a morning person, don't start each day with it. It's going to be 10 o'clock someone's going to say, well, what'd you learn today? I have no idea. I do it in a funk. But I do it every day so I can say I did it. In the same way, if you're a night person, do it at night. You know, that's great. Now, I'm not a night person, all right? Now, the older I get, I'm really not a morning person either. I got a couple of good hours around lunch, and that's it. As long as I can get my nap, you know, I can get through dinner. But yeah, but seriously, you got to figure out when you're at your best, and you got to go for it. So that's an inside intimacy kind of term. No. Worship is an outside kind of expressive kind of term. I want to continue to be more proactive in the appreciation of all that's around me that draws my attention to my Lord. And so it's God's book that I read every day. It's books that aren't by God that stimulate me intellectually. It's the beauty of nature. It's the beauty of art and sculpture and God's creation. It's all of these things that on the outside cause me to want to worship Him. Serving Him talks about my horizontal demonstration of my love for God. I want to continue to communicate my faith to those around me every day. I every year, somehow, I figure out a way to work this into one of my talks, but it's been helpful to a lot of people because we're all in the same boat. Several years ago, I came to the realization that I was a miserable failure in communicating spiritual truth to my kids as they grew up. But the stupid myth that if my kids want to learn spirituality from me, they'll come to all of my meetings and sit on the front row, never even realizing they're not here, and sending them off to live their lives with virtually no spiritual input from their dad. And then our lives are falling apart in the midst, and it's just wrong. So Kathy says to me, well, you know, it's never too late. Make it right. And thankfully, it's the age of the internet. And even though we live all over the place, for 4 years now, every Christmas, they get a 365-day devotional from me. You should have seen the first year. This was like getting, you know, a free root canal from me as a Christmas present. You know, they're kind of looking, anything else there, Dad? And I said, okay, we're going to read this together every morning, and I'm going to send you an email of my summary of what we've talked about. And we've done it every day now for 4 years. Just keep changing the devotional every year. And it's like, honestly, I don't know if they're reading it or not. You know, I mean, I certainly wouldn't bury the key word in the end of the email. I mean, they would might go for months without ever getting that information. But I think they are, at least on some sort of occasion, they're looking at what we're doing. And it's an important thing. It's never too late. It's never too late. And because of the day that we live in, one of the things that I want in my kind of begin with the end in mind is I want my family to remain as close as we can be. And I'm still not going to get any love from the Giants fans on this, but I do want you to hear that part of the reason this whole Dodgers thing has come up is all five of my adult kids have somehow tapped into ways to see the Dodger game every night, whether it's MLB.com or the kid who lives out in Vegas, gets it live, right? They've got it on out there. I don't know how Jeffrey gets it, but he gets it. So every night on our cell phone is a thread with six people, the five kids and me, and they're talking about every pitch, every inning. And I'm thinking, well, look, this could be backgammon or, you know, curling. I don't care whether it's Dodgers baseball or the Knitting Society. We've got six adults who can't wait to communicate with one another every game night. Who gets to do that? What a great day we live in. That we can be in Seattle and in Las Vegas and in Southern California, and we can all communicate together because there's something that's bringing us together. And whether it be a great victory or a horrific loss, we've got that unifier, all right? Seek, to me, talks about the vertical part of it, that I want to continue to be drawn closer to the Lord, never getting over the fact that he wants to be in relationship with me. Never get past the basics. The simple message that I'm a mess, God's not, I need him. And I trust him with my life, and as so many of us indicated on Tuesday, I commit myself completely to him. I not only want to be saved by him, I want to serve him as a sign of my love for him, just like I would serve my wife, for I love her. So, one more point in David's farewell address is all the way down in verse 20, where he says, David continued, "Be strong and courageous and do the work. Don't be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord God, my God, is with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. He will see to it that all the work related to the temple is finished correctly." So, here's my final point. These have been long points, so I'll say them more than once. I learned that with God there is strength, encouragement, and enduring love, not fear, discouragement, and forsaking. Whew, man, that's a long one. I learned with God there is strength, encouragement, and enduring love, not fear, discouragement, and forsaking. Strength and courage and without fear. Isn't it fascinating? If you go back to our first talk on Monday, that's how David was described. He was described as a man of strength. He was the brave warrior. He was described as a person who was courageous, who had good judgment. And he was also described as a person, as a man without fear, which I see perfectly in conjunction with the man after God's own heart. And so we come to the final day of our week at Mount Hermon. Your children are learning today this truth. We are fully and completely beloved by God. Now, wouldn't that be a great way to go out? That being your final words, your final message. We are fully and completely beloved by God. So let me wrap it up this way. If you knew the moment of your farewell address, what's the very first thing you would share with those close to you? In other words, what's your headline? What are you leading with? What's the very most important thing? That might take some thought. So let me pull back the camera just a little bit, give you a little more wiggle room. Secondly, if you had to reduce all of life to just four words, what would those four words be? If you had to reduce all of your life to just four words, what would those four words be? Many of you heard me talk before about how I got motivated to write the book called The Shortlist, which the subtitle is, "In a World Full of Choices, There Are Only Four That Really Matter." I realized, as Craig so beautifully described this week in the commandments, the whole idea of I was out of the rhythm of the life balance. And I realized I really needed to do something radical about it, and because I wanted to be invested in the lives of my kids. And so I started trying to realize what would be most significant in terms of what I want to leave behind to them. And the short list represents the four words in my life. Interestingly enough, as I was putting all that stuff together, I got the phone call on a Saturday night in August that my dad had suddenly passed away on this miniature golf accident. My sister called me. We're it for the Butterworths. She lives in Miami as a school teacher down there. And so we said, let's get over to Philly and see if we can, you know, take care of all this. And since it was August and mom and dad grew up in a small church, all the pastoral staff was on vacation. And my sister says, well, that's not a problem. My older brother is a minister. He'll perform the funeral. So I had the privilege and the nerve-wracking experience of conducting my own dad's funeral. And so I was trying to put together the things that I wanted to say about dad. And while I was doing it, it hit me. I am having the privilege of articulating my dad's short list, my dad's four words. And it was amazing to me. And I did pretty well. I got choked up just a couple of times. And one time I got choked up only because I realized, whoa, you know, one of these days we're going to go through this whole exercise again, except instead of me standing here and my dad being in that box over there, one of my kids is going to be standing here and I'm going to be over in that box over there. And what are they going to say about me? And you've got to know my kids. You know it'll have some high comedy as they make fun of all the weaknesses I've ever demonstrated in my life. Don't let dad near power tools. Don't let dad near anything electric. By all means, don't give dad a checkbook. He still doesn't do subtraction. Don't, you know, I mean, you know, they'll go through a litany of my weaknesses. But, oh, that they would get to the end and say, I'll tell you what, I'll never forget this. Every day he was alive, I knew he loved me. What's your four words? What are they going to look like? And then another way to put it, could those close to you already give your farewell address? That's beginning with the end in mind. So when we look at the life of David, there's a lot we can glean. And I have loved how different ones of you have talked during different parts of the week about certain issues that have been discussed that hit you. Everybody got something different. But I'm hoping we can all form a giant group hug around this one, that I want to be a person that leaves a legacy so that people around me will remember who I am in a godly way because of the qualities that I want to leave behind. Would you bow your heads with me? Lord, give us the answer to that prayer. Help us be men and women who have thought about the end and attempt to live our lives with that end in mind. Some of us won't be here to celebrate this time next year because something will happen that will take us away. Others of us have decades ahead to work on this. But help us as we think about our headline, our four words, and the ability for others to know in advance what we once said, because they see it in our lives. Lord, help us to not get bogged down with complicated stuff before we just master the simple words of faith. Help us to trust and obey. In Jesus' name, amen.